Jason Tatum, Kemba Walker, Marcus Smart, they all did it again. What a win in Oklahoma City. We're going to talk about it with Chuck McKenney of RedsArmy.com. Millies, let's go. Rain of J's back with the vengeance. Back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline. Global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line. Play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day. Trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way. Melly. What a game, what a win for the Boston Celtics. 112-111 over the Oklahoma City Thunder on Sunday afternoon. Happy Monday. I'm John Corrales of MassLive.com, joined by Chuck McKenney of RedsArmy.com to talk about this game. I don't usually do two-person recaps anymore, so this is a special treat, Chuck.
Oh, I'm honored. I'm honored for this rare occurrence.
You should be. You should be.
I cleared my schedule. Once you told me you were interested in this, I got up off the couch and said, I think I can handle this tonight. So
that's good. That's good. I'm glad. I'm glad you cleared your Sunday night. I know you're a big Oscars guy.
Right.
Yeah. So Celtics, I love this game. I thought this was great, especially after the Celtics and the Atlanta Hawks played such a blah, crappy game. That was what, Friday night? I don't even want to talk about that game. I'm not even going to bother. Let's just talk about this game. The only thing that carries over from that last game is that Jason Tatum has been awesome lately. He finished with 26 points, 11 rebounds on 10 of 19 shooting, 4 of 7. The way he's taking over later in games and down the stretch, I know he had a couple of late turnovers, which was not great, but generally speaking, Tatum over the past 4 or 5 games has just been amazing.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, last week really was. I think we had Atlanta twice and we had Orlando, right?
Yeah.
And we were still able to win as everyone was on kind of this load management schedule, forcing these sorts of like minor injuries. So we survived that, right? But it felt good. You know, this was a big game. The Thunder have been playing really well. And this was a big game. You start the road trip, and you start it off right. And it didn't take me long to remember why I despise Chris Paul. I mean, James Harden takes a lot of shit, right, when you watch Harden play. But Chris Paul is really the original James Harden, right? I mean, he embellishes everything. He's a master flopper. He's always working the officials.
Yep.
So he was James Harden before James Harden. And, you know, I just felt like the officials were falling for all the nonsense. The calls didn't seem too fair initially. Not that the Celtics weren't committing some dumb plays, but it just had that feel, right? So, like, we're playing the Thunder. You know, my hatred for Paul is bubbling up. The officials are starting to piss me off. You know, it was a competitive game. It was a close game. But you're absolutely right. To see Tatum – right, continue to do what he's doing in this sort of game against some of the big names. Man, the dude is just so clutch, and he's just so like he's there, right? He's embracing this moment, this big time moment, whether it's the start of games or finishing games, or when the team needs him at any other point. He's really stepping up, and he's like leading stretches. He's going on these personal like 7-9 point runs.
Yeah.
So I you know, I'm gushing about him, but I don't know how you can't.
Right.
Right.
The numbers are pretty good. He's scored 20 or more in his last 9 games. In his last 4, he's averaging just under 30 points, hitting 50% of his shots, 54% from 3, 7.5 rebounds, just under 4 assists, a steal, a block. I mean, the last 4 games have been amazing. And all of these games after he was named to the All-Star team. Like, this is that's what I really like about the performance. It's that he got named to the All-Star team, and he didn't be like – he wasn't like, oh, all right, well, good, cool. I'm an All-Star. I can just chill. He got named to the All-Star team. He was like, oh, well, let me just go out there and show you exactly why I'm an All-Star. And he's been playing like an All-Star. That one drive in the third quarter I forget who set the pick. I don't know if it was Tyson set the pick, but he kind of backed up and then changed directions and then split. He was going to get blitzed and he split it and went by Steven Adams. And then he avoided another guy and went to the left to fit. Like, that was just an elite drive. Scal called it special elite or elite special or whatever in the broadcast. There are no words like that. That is a play that you haven't really seen from him. And he's just putting it together. He's slowly kind of been figuring it out. And I've talked so much about him kind of going through the course of the season where early on he was just attacking the rim at like one speed. We're talking about him kind of comparing him to Jaylen Brown last year and how he was doing the things that Jaylen Brown was doing, moving too fast, going at one speed, not really varying anything. The difference between Jason and Jaylen, I think Jason is just picking it up a tick faster than Jaylen did. And now he's like learning. Like, I asked him about it directly after one of the recent games. And he's like, it's slowing down. The game is slowing down. I'm kind of being more patient. I'm just reading things a little bit better. And this is the result. Like, and this is the result now. Like, forget about next year and the year after and the year after when he's still many years probably from being his best. Like, we're seeing exactly why. Like, oh yeah, this is the reason why people have been like gushing about Jason Tatum. This is why Danny Ainge didn't throw Tatum into just any deal. And you know, like, it was going to be Tatum in a deal for Anthony Davis, and it wasn't Tatum in a deal just to get Anthony Davis and let's see. It was, I'm only giving this dude up if I know I'm getting Anthony Davis for the long term. And if I'm not, then forget it, because this is what you get.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it seems like, I don't know, maybe it was as short as like 6 weeks ago that I was still throwing my hands up in the air when Tatum would drive to the hoop because it still seemed like he had trouble holding on to the ball or the turnovers were still happening. And I know it's really, you know, what we're seeing now is really the byproduct of all his hard work. But there is something that makes you feel like something has changed, like within the last couple of weeks. And it's like that switch was flipped where he's just doing something different. Like you talked about, it's slowing down and he realized he doesn't have to go 100 miles an hour. He's still effective against these bigs when he slows it down and makes his move. I mean, he's so nifty and crafty now, and his ability to finish with both hands, it's unbelievable. And then when you think about when he can pretty much get whatever shot he wants on the perimeter and to complement his game with this, right, as guys rush out on him, because it's his shooting that's still, you know, the best part of his game. So he's going to continue to get guys running out at him. And then the more comfortable he is finishing, forget it. It's all over. I mean, this is just it's all coming together. Now, you did touch on it. There were a couple sequences very late in the game, and it wasn't just Tatum. I think it was a combination of players where I don't understand why the Celtics weren't just holding the ball on the perimeter and running 20 seconds off the clock. I mean, they had a 9-point lead. There was a minute left or a minute 10 left. Like, you take 20 seconds off each of your possessions, you're forcing them to foul. But the Celtics were attacking earlier than they needed to in the shot clock, and there were a few turnovers. And I'm not sure why that happened. That was a little frustrating. But but overall, you know, there's always one man who, no matter how he's playing in the game, always seems to close the door, save the day, make that one play that needs to be made. And when you think about it, right? I mean, now Alexander's. This is my first time really watching him, and there's been a lot of hype about him. And he's even better than the hype, because I was like, wow, this kid is legit, right? Inside out, he's got a lot. And Scal was gushing about him. But just to see Smart pick his pocket clean was just so satisfying. I mean, wasn't that just a magnificent play?
It was an amazing play. And we're going to talk about it after the break. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back and continue this, because that Marcus Smart play deserves an entire conversation on its own. So stick around for more on that. First, I want to make sure that you know about echelon, it's time to get fit. And you don't have to join a gym or pay a ton for an overpriced piece of fitness equipment. The best way to get in shape is with Echelon. Go to echelonfit.com to discover their EX1 connected fitness bikes that offer a high quality at-home cycling experience at less than half the price of a Peloton. Echelon makes beautifully engineered products for everyone, busy moms and dads, first responders, elite athletes, doesn't matter whatever your activity level. And the daily live and on-demand studio classes come right to your home. You'll never have to leave or set foot in a gym. You'll love Echelon, but if you're not 100% satisfied for some reason, you'll get your money back. Join hundreds of thousands of men and women who are getting fit with Echelon. Don't pay a ton, get it? Pay a ton for Peloton. Buy an Echelon bike today for under $1,000. Go to echelonfit.com/LONBA. to learn about their limited-time free Apple iPad and complete details of this exclusive offer. Echelon, it's your time. That's E-C-H-E-L-O-N, E-C-H-E-L-O-N, fit.com/LONBA, echelonfit.com/LONBA.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
So the Celtics had this thing kind of in hand. They built up a lead that in that game should have been kind of enough. And maybe they felt like it was enough. It was right after Kemba Walker hit back-to-back threes. It seemed like they were in command. They had gotten a couple of stops, and then all of a sudden, like Chuck was saying before the break, the turnovers came. And all of a sudden, it was a three-point game. And so Shai Gilgeous-Alexander dribbling down the left side. Marcus Smart switches onto him. Now, he wasn't the guy that was guarding him originally. He switched onto him, picked his pocket clean, and then got it up to Kemba, who hit a free throw and iced the game. That play was just an amazing, amazing defensive play. Another example of Marcus Smart, Chuck. Just he was having – I wrote after the game, I did the 10 things on Mass Live, and one of my entries was Marcus Smart had a rare blah game in Oklahoma because he went to Oklahoma State. Every time he goes back there, he has a really good game. Maybe Russell Westbrook not being there kind of took some of the juice out of his kind of love for going back to Oklahoma, but because he always used to have fun playing against Westbrook. But it was like a weird game. He had three early fouls. He got a tech at halftime. It was just like Marcus Smart's going to have one of these games every once in a while, and this was just one where it was just kind of blah. And then he comes in, hits a couple of big shots, gets a steal and an assist to Jason Tatum, and then he makes this play to ice the game.
Yeah, I mean, this really is just it's just this performance here. What we saw today really just encapsulates what he's all about. Even when his game is not going, right, he's still able to salvage it at the end by making, and you're right, he didn't have a pretty big three-pointer, and then obviously with the steal. I felt like he got a raw deal on a couple of the fouls. One clearly where it looked like he took one in the chest and they called him for the block. Again, I wasn't a fan of the officiating in the first half, so I felt like he just didn't get the respect there on that call. And then, you know, three fouls, it takes him a little bit out of his rhythm. Because when you look at his numbers, he still only got up five shots for Marcus. That's not a lot. He only had a couple of assists. So he wasn't making an impact on this game until, you know, the final couple minutes. But that's just what he does, right?
And,
you know, I think most of us come to expect it knowing that, all right, he's, you know, if there's ever a player who's going to scuffle around for 20, 25 minutes and then, you know, just flip the switch at the ends, it's definitely going to be Marcus. I mean, he lives for these moments, and that was a glorious steal. it really was, you know, because I went from being so furious that they, you know, allowed the game to kind of, you know, come back and allowed the Thunder to come back and tie this. But Marcus is like, you know, not on my watch. I got you guys, right? It was just so Marcus, and it was just so magnificent.
It really was. And another guy that had a not so great game, even though he was scoring, was Kemba Walker. I mean, two guys that it doesn't matter how they're playing throughout the course of the game, but Walker is a little bit different, obviously, but you know, so he was 9 for 9 from the line, but he shot 3 of 13 over the first three quarters. Then in the fourth quarter, he hit 3 for 3, back-to-back three-pointers, ends up leading the Celtics with 27 points. Both he and Smart, that backcourt, that closing backcourt, can explode. Like, no team can go into a fourth quarter and say, all right, this guy's cold. He's just going to be cold on this night. Like, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Gordon Hayward even, are guys where if they're shooting 1 for 7 going into the fourth quarter, there's still a strong chance that they end up like 1 for 10 or 1 for 11, you know, yeah, or 2 for 11. Like, those guys have all had bad shooting nights this season. But Kemba, go back to the beginning of the season. Like, remember the first few games of the season where Kemba was like struggling out of the gate, wasn't quite sure, and then in the fourth quarter, he's like, all right, I'm going to take over in the fourth quarter. Then boom, 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 he hits like 2-3 straight shots, and you're like, oh, shit, that's what, that's right, Kemba does this. So I guess what this game and what these performances continue to show is that there's one thing about this team is they are, it's tough to count them out. And you look at, you know, when you look at their point differential, which I haven't seen it after this game, but it was hovering around just about 7 after, you know, in one of the best point differentials in the NBA. Let's see, it's at 7.2 now. So it's second in the East and second overall in the NBA. One of the reasons is you can never count them out. And when they lose, they don't lose generally by a ton. And if but when they win, they end up winning often by comfortable margins because, you know, these guys are able to hit late shots, make late plays, and all of a sudden a 2-point game goes to 10 or a 10-point lead gets cut down to 2 and they give themselves a chance.
Yeah, I mean, there's never a moment where I don't think Kemba can get red hot. Right. He could be 1 for 19. And I still feel like at any given moment. And I think some of that stems from him just torching us, torching the Celtics when he was with Charlotte. It just seemed like he could go on these ridiculous sort of spurts. So seeing him in the fourth quarter tonight, is not surprising at all. I've just come to expect it. But just looking at the, you know, the box score, I felt, you know, Hayward had another solid game. I know he only finished with 13 points and 10 rebounds, but I mean, he was 5 for 10 from the field, right? Like there could have been more opportunity for him. So I know one guy usually, you know, of the four kind of sits back. You can't have everybody shooting 15 plus field goals. But again, he was super efficient. Feels super confident with him when he's in transition, in the mid range. So there was, you know, we could have got a little more from Gordon, but the only, I felt like Brad went a bit too, he stuck, and Langford only played 6 minutes, but it felt like 12.
Yeah, right? That was bad.
He wasn't catching the benefit. He was in a couple tough spots. He got a couple, you know, maybe one tough whistle, and he was just making some not so bright plays. But there was a stretch there where he and Grant Williams were Charlotte took advantage. I mean, Oklahoma City took advantage of them. And it just seemed like that kind of helped them maintain the lead there. I think it had to be in that second quarter.
It was.
Right. But I mean, you know, I don't think Brad went back to Langford, right? I don't think he played in the second half.
Brad, he did not.
Brad tightened up the rotation. So, he it seemed like Langford had played fairly well the previous game, so Brad was giving him the benefit of the doubt, but he quickly learned that it wasn't going to be the rookie's night. So
right.
We survived that.
We did. I mean, that was, you know, it was a little tough there. Let's do this, because there are a few extra points here from this game that I want to touch on. We'll take a break, come back, we'll finish off with like some rapid fire points. And we'll start off with Gordon Hayward after the break. Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. So there was a stretch through the first half of the game where Gordon Hayward was easily the best player on the floor for the Celtics. In the first quarter, for sure, Hayward was just all over the place. And he was, let's see, 2 of 2, both of them threes. He drew a foul, a couple of rebounds and assists, so 7 points in the first quarter. And then he hit a couple of early shots, I think, or one early shot in the second quarter. And then Tatum kind of took over, and he just, Hayward just kind of filled in gaps after that. In the third quarter, he started out again, hit a couple of shots. And this, I think, when everybody's kind of healthy, and this is the first time they've been healthy for a while, this is kind of like what we need Gordon Hayward to be. Because we know Tatum's going to be a scorer. Like, he's going to be a guy who can just get hot and put together a 12-point quarter like he did in the third. Kemba's Kemba. We know that. And so after that, Gordon saying, you know, Gordon coming out and getting hot and like carrying things until Tatum could figure things out, until other guys could figure things out. Super important. And then once those guys started figuring things out, once it was Tatum and Kemba going, Hayward just makes that next right play and uses his gravity to move the ball. And I think that's a really important element to Gordon's game. It's this unselfishness, this willingness to just kind of say, all right, the game right now is flowing towards them. I'm not going to do something stupid to kind of force my own offense. Let's just keep it flowing towards them. And if people want to say afterwards, like, oh, well, Gordon only had 13. Like, no. Gordon started out as the best player on the floor and then gave way when someone else rose to become the best player on the floor. And I think that's the way we should be looking at this. It's not that Gordon struggled or anything like that. He just took a step back and was like, let's move it. Let's get it to this guy. Let's do other things. And it worked.
No, that's great. You said filling in gaps. I love that. We also sometimes hear, he gives the game what it needs. Maybe Doc had said that in years past. But that's absolutely right. And that's invaluable. And oftentimes, you know, players as talented at Hayward as Hayward can't do it, right? Because it's just you're always walking a fine line. And sometimes they can't turn off their scorer's mentality or something. But he has the ability to just make the right play. And it's super important with some of these young guys. It's just a really good fit for this group. So I'm super glad that it's him and not Andre Drummond clogging the middle.
speaking of which, Daniel Theis had a very, very nice game, very effective. I thought, you know, talk about doing the little things and giving the game what it needs. First of all, I think the Celtics won this game in the second half because they started attacking versus settling for threes. And in the first half, they took 23 three-pointers and got 3 offensive rebounds. In the second half, they took 13 threes and had 11 offensive rebounds. And they weren't from Cantor because Cantor sucked in this game. They were from Daniel Theis, who just was kind of advantageous. He was opportunistic is the word I'm actually looking for. He was there. He was getting dump offs. He was getting putbacks, tip outs. He was getting assists after getting an offensive rebound and tipping it out. And then defensively, I thought he did a great job riding guards as they drove kind of away from the hoop. That challenge on the Shai Gilgeous-Alexander miss late in the game where he really forced him to shoot it way up over his hand. Like, he didn't block the shot. It looked like he might have blocked it or goaltended or something. But he forced Alexander to kind of throw it way up high, and it really caused him to miss the shot, I think. I think he just gave the game. Like, he was just a force on both ends of the floor. Nothing gaudy, nothing that showed up in a lot of the box score, but Daniel Theis was very, very important down the stretch.
Yeah, I mean, so you mentioned Cantor, right? I mean, he still had about 8 boards, and I saw him banging with, you know, Steven Adams. You'd think a team that has a big bruising center like Adams, Cantor might be able to at least occupy some space, right? Cantor's strength is one of his advantages, but he did sort of struggle. So I don't know how often he was on the court with Adams. It seemed like when Noel was on the court, there were times when you could see his athleticism really taking advantage of Cantor. So I wasn't sure. I didn't, you know, take a deep dive as to why Cantor struggled.
Well, I can tell you the biggest problem was that they put him in pick and roll. I'm amazed that all season long, teams, when they see Cantor on the floor, haven't put him in pick and roll. And the biggest thing that I fear as far as that goes in the playoffs is teams make adjustments and they'll see Cantor on the floor and they'll attack him with the pick and roll. And with Chris Paul or Dennis Schroeder, like, you can't give them mid-range shots, like especially Chris Paul. That's his thing. That's what he does. So they torched him in those possessions, and like he can only play drop pick and roll coverage. And when he's falling back and giving a guard that space, they just ate him up. If they didn't sub him out in the fourth quarter when they did, they were absolutely going to lose that game.
Yeah, I mean that's a good point. The Thunder are really, you know, they shoot a higher percentage, so they did seem to be, and that's always been Chris Paul's wheelhouse, is those mid range shots. So that's understandable. But yeah, you know, Tice continues to do his thing, and it's, you know, I'll keep saying it going into the season, huge question mark, and for me, it's no longer a question mark. Like, I have complete confidence in him to play defense. You know, I know he's going to play defense. He still has the ability to stretch the floor a bit on offense. And the other given is there's at least going to be two plays where he's totally screwed by the officials. It's zero respect.
It really is true. It's so funny. It's so funny. And then I got to bring up Jaylen Brown. It feels like Jaylen just kind of, there's so many little storylines that came into this game, like that came out of this game, that Jaylen just kind of faded into the background, but he had a nice, you know, 17 point game, 3 of 7 from three. He didn't shoot, like 7 of 17 is not great. And he didn't take a free throw, and he sprained both ankles. He aggravated the right ankle and turned the left one. So Jesus Christ, man. A nice performance from Jaylen. I really have no other opinion of Jaylen Brown's performance other than he did a nice job, and he's been hitting some mid-range shots. I will say the Celtics have done well kind of living in the mid-range a little bit. They're somewhere in the middle of the pack in percentage of mid-range shots. They're not taking too many. They're not taking an egregious amount, but it's not eliminated from their game either. Jaylen, Jason, obviously Gordon Hayward, all live in that range from time to time, and it's worked for them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any problems when I see them drive and then pull up, right? Obviously, Hayward's mastered that. You know, Jaylen can do the same. He sort of gets it's almost like an extended post up where he's in the paint and he's pivoting and he shoots that fadeaway, or I think he even launched a floater tonight. I don't know. They seem to fit. They seem to flow with the offense. They're just not forced mid-range shots. You know, like we saw a lot from Tatum last year. They seem to be different.
Yeah.
That's the best way I can describe it.
No, it's true. Like if you're stepping into them in rhythm, like that's fine. I think you need to hit a couple of those shots from time to time. You can't seek them out. Obviously you want threes and layups and free throws. Like I get that. But sometimes that mid-range shot is going to be what you get, and it's going to be what you get in the playoffs, and you've got to be able to hit those at a decent enough percentage to draw a defender up, because if you're doing that, you start getting those things that happen with Tice. Like you drive and you get to the middle of the lane 10 to 12 feet, and teams say, this guy's been killing us all year, all game on this. You naturally go to that guy, and then a guy like Tice, who's hanging out somewhere in the dunker spot along the baseline, can slide up, you can dump it down, and that's where you start scoring those points. That's an important thing to put psychologically in an opposing defense. And if, and this was always one of my problems with the Houston Rockets, like if, or just that mentality, like, no, you never take that shot. Well, if I know you're never taking that shot, then every time you drive, I'm just going to sag back and protect the rim and make that layup as difficult as possible. But if I know that you're going to take that shot somewhere on the elbow and hit it at 50% or so, I have to come up and challenge. I have to. Otherwise, it's a warm-up shot for you. And so I like that they do that just enough.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. So you mentioned the, you know, you mentioned the Rockets, and they're right there. They're in the same sort of similar record as the Thunder. So, you know, I looked at this 8-game trip, and I thought, I think maybe most of us said, you know, 5-3 is that's what we want. If we pull off 5-3, that's successful. So, you know, we started off with a win. It was a great win. Now going to Houston, do you automatically pull back and say, well, you know, are we going to be able to pull off two in a row? But I don't know. I mean, I saw enough today. And, you know, obviously if Brown's out, if the ankles are a problem, then maybe that changes it. But I wouldn't put it past this team to go into Houston and pull off that win. Although I'm not sure. Are the Rockets playing right now?
I don't think. Oh yeah, they are playing right now.
Yeah, they're playing Utah. And they're in a close one.
Yeah.
So they'll still have a night off. But anyway, you know, I think 5-3 is a reasonable take, right, for this road trip. I mean, that seems like. I would be thrilled.
Well, they come back to play the Clippers at home before the All-Star break, but then they do go back out for. But if that, you're talking about this 8-game stretch.
Oh, 8-game stretch. Yeah.
So right. I mean, look. Okay, so they got this win, beating. Four more teams in this, you know, Minnesota. If they can get Houston, that's three. Yeah, I mean, 5-3 would be great. I'm chalking up that Utah game as a huge loss. Like we talk about them not losing close games.
That's a scheduled loss.
That's a scheduled blowout. You go from Minnesota. That's the end of a road trip out of the All-Star break. You go from Portland. Across a time zone, into altitude on a back-to-back. And playing in Utah is hard enough as it is. I feel like if they keep that game close, I think that's a victory. If they win that game, I'd be amazed. I'm going into this thinking that that's like a 20-point loss. Like that, yeah. That's a shitty thing to put on the schedule. I hate it. I don't think they're gonna like that. That's a tough one, but. They can beat Minnesota. We'll see how they're playing with D'Angelo Russell. Lakers is going to be a tough game. I'll be in LA for that. Portland plays tough all the time. So, yeah, 5-3, I'd sign up for that.
Yeah, I'm now reviewing it. I'm thinking, I'll take 4-4.
Well, we'll see. I mean, right now the Celtics have now won seven games in a row, which is amazing. What's depending on how you look at it, like, the Celtics have won seven games in a row, and they've lost a half game to the Raptors. But the Raptors, won 14 games in a row and only gained a half game against the Celtics. So which side of that is like if you're on the Toronto side, you're like, Jesus, we've whipped off 14 straight games. And we can only gain a half game in the standings.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm still stunned at Toronto. I mean, I'm still stunned. And I shouldn't be, right? I think, you know, we're deep enough into the season to know that they're going to be right there, even if the Celtics are fortunate enough to flip-flop with them.
They're due for a loss, though. I mean, they're due for a stretch where they need to, you know, like, how do you win 14 in a row? And it's not been like, look, they have some patsies in there. In fact, well, now I'm looking at it. Holy shit. Okay, so OKC, which is a good team, but then Washington, Minnesota, Atlanta, Philly, which is just a mess right now. New York, San Antonio, which is they're okay, but you know, end of the playoff teams. Atlanta, Cleveland, Detroit, Chicago, Indiana twice, and Brooklyn. So Indiana's a good team, Brooklyn's an okay team. San Antonio's an okay team. Philly's a mess. OKC's a good team. Like, they've gotten fat on some pretty bad teams in that stretch. So, so I mean, they're due. They've got Milwaukee coming up. They got a road trip after the All-Star break, Denver, Phoenix. Yeah, geez, they've got, I'm looking at their schedule. They need to start playing some tough teams, man. They got cupcakes the rest of the way. All right. Anyway, we'll see how that goes. Maybe we need to start looking at this third seed, because that looks like, after looking at all that, we'll do an analysis or something down the road. We're going to wrap up the show and say thanks to everybody for listening. If you enjoy the show and you're not a subscriber, go ahead and subscribe wherever you get your podcast, however you're listening. If you are a regular subscriber and you have not given that 5-star rating and a good written review, I would implore you, beg you even, to go and do that. It is extraordinarily helpful, and I really mean that. I'm not just lying. It's very, very helpful because it draws listeners in. So please do that and share the podcast. Tell everybody to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.